Now, the first question is from Mr. Niven and is for Vice President Nixon.
Mr. Vice President, Senator Kennedy said last night that the administration must take responsibility for the loss of Cuba. Would you compare the validity of that statement with the validity of your own statements in previous campaigns that the Truman administration was responsible for the loss of China to the communists?
Well, first of all, I don't agree with Senator Kennedy that Cuba is lost. And certainly, China was lost when this administration came into power in 1953. As I look at Cuba today, I believe that we are following the right course, a course which is difficult, but a course which, under the circumstances, the only proper one, which will see that the Cuban people get a chance to realize their aspirations of progress through freedom, and that they get that with our cooperation with the other states and the Organization of American States. Now, Senator Kennedy has made some very strong criticisms of my part, or alleged part, in what has happened in Cuba. He points to the fact that I visited Cuba while Mr. Batista was in power there. I can only point out that if we are going to judge the administrations in terms of our attitude toward dictators, we're glad to have a comparison with the previous administration. There were 11 dictators in South America and in Central America when we came in 1953. Today, there are only three left, including the one in Cuba. We think that's pretty good progress. Senator Kennedy also indicated with regard to Cuba that he thought that I had made a mistake when I was in Cuba in not calling for free elections in that country. Now, I'm very surprised that Senator Kennedy, who is on the Foreign Relations Committee, would have made such a statement of this kind. As a matter of fact, in his book, The Strategy for Peace, he took the right position. And that position is that the United States has a treaty with all of the Organization of American States, which prohibits us from interfering in the internal affairs of any other state and prohibits them as well. For me to have made such a statement would have been in direct opposition to that treaty. Now, with regard to Cuba, let me make one thing very clear. There isn't any question but that we will defend our rights there. There isn't any question but that we will defend Guantanamo if it's attacked. There also isn't any question but that the free people of Cuba, the people who want to be free, are going to be supported and that they will attain their freedom. No, Cuba is not lost. And I don't think this kind of defeatist talk by Senator Kennedy helps the situation one bit.
Senator Kennedy, would you care to comment?
In the first place, I never suggested that Cuba was lost, except for the present. In my speech last night, I indicated that I thought that Cuba one day again would be free. Where I've been critical of the administration's policy, and where I criticized Mr. Nixon, was because in his press conference in Havana in 1955, he praised the competence and stability of the Batista dictatorship. That dictatorship had killed over 20,000 Cubans in 7 years. Secondly, I did not criticize him for not calling for free elections. What I criticized was the failure of the administration to use its great influence to persuade the Cuban government to hold free elections, particularly in 1957 and 1958. Thirdly, Arthur Gardner, a Republican ambassador, Earl Smith, a Republican ambassador in succession, both have indicated in the past 6 weeks that they reported to Washington that Castro was a Marxist, that Raul Castro was a communist, and that they got no effective results. Instead, our aid continued to Batista, which was ineffective. We never were on the side of freedom. We never used our influence when we could have used it most effectively. And today, Cuba is lost for freedom. I hope someday it will rise. But I don't think it will rise if we continue the same policies towards Cuba that we did in recent years, and in fact, towards all of Latin America, when we've almost ignored the needs of Latin America. We've beamed not a single Voice of America program in Spanish to all of Latin America in the last 8 years, except for the 3 months of the Hungarian Revolution.
Mr. Morgan, with a question for Senator Kennedy.
Senator, last May in Oregon, you discussed the possibilities of sending apologies or regrets to Khrushchev over the U-2 incident. Do you think now that that would have done any good? Did you think so then?
Mr. Morgan, I suggested that if the United States felt that it could save the summit conference, that it would have been proper for us to have expressed regret. In my judgment, that statement has been distorted by Mr. Nixon and others in their debates around the country and in their discussions. Mr. Lodge on Meet the Press a month ago said if there was ever a case when we did not have law on our side, it was in the U-2 incident. The U-2 flights were proper from the point of view of protecting our security, but they were not in accordance with international law. And I said that I felt that rather than tell the lie which we told, rather than indicate that the flights would continue, in fact, I believe Mr. Nixon himself said on May 15th that the flights would continue, even though Mr. Herter testified before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee that they had been canceled as of May 12th, that it would have been far better that if we had expressed regrets, if that would have saved the summit, and if the summit is useful, and I believe it is. The point that is always left out is the fact that we expressed regrets to Castro this winter, that we expressed regrets to the Eisenhower administration, expressed regrets for a flight over southern Russia in 1958. We expressed regrets for a flight over eastern Germany under this administration. The Soviet Union in 1955 expressed regrets to us over the Bering Sea incident. The Chinese communists expressed regrets to us over a plane incident in 1956. That is the accepted procedure between nations. And my judgment is that we should follow the advice of Theodore Roosevelt. Be strong, maintain a strong position, but also speak softly. I believe that in those cases where international custom calls for the expression of a regret, if that would have kept the summit going, in my judgment, it was a proper action. It's not appeasement. It's not soft. I believe we should be stronger than we now are. I believe we should have a stronger military force. I believe we should increase our strength all over the world. But I don't confuse words with strength. And in my judgment, if the summit was useful, if it would have brought us closer to peace, that rather than the lie that we told, which has been criticized by all responsible people afterwards, it would have been far better for us to follow the common diplomatic procedure of expressing regrets and then try to move on.
Mr. Vice President.
I think Senator Kennedy is wrong on three counts. First of all, he's wrong in thinking or even suggesting that Mr. Khrushchev might have continued the conference if we had expressed regrets. He knew these flights were going on long before, and that wasn't the reason that he broke up the conference. Second, he's wrong in the analogies that he makes. The United States is a strong country. Whenever we do anything that's wrong, we can express regrets. But when the President of the United States is doing something that's right, something that is for the purpose of defending the security of this country against surprise attack, he can never express regrets or apologize to anybody, including Mr. Khrushchev. Now, in that connection, Senator Kennedy has criticized the President on the ground not only of not expressing regrets, but because he allowed this flight to take place while the summit conference, or immediately before the summit conference, occurred. This seems to me is criticism that again is wrong on his part. We all remember Pearl Harbor. We lost 3,000 American lives. We cannot afford an intelligence gap. And I just want to make my position absolutely clear with regard to getting intelligence information. I don't intend to see to it that the United States is ever in a position where, while we're negotiating with the Soviet Union, that we discontinue our intelligence effort. And I don't intend ever to express regrets to Mr. Khrushchev or anybody else if I'm doing something that has the support of the Congress and that is right for the purpose of protecting the security of the United States.
Mr. Levy with a question for Senator Kennedy.
Senator, in the past you have emphasized the President's responsibility as a moral leader as well as an executive on civil rights questions. What specifically might the next president do in the event of an occurrence such as Little Rock or the lunch counter sit-ins?
Let me say that I think the president operates in a number of different areas. First, as a legislative leader. Secondly, as an executive leader. There have been only six cases brought by this attorney general under the voting bill passed in 1957 and the voting bill passed in 1960. The right to vote is basic. I do not believe that this administration has implemented those bills which represent the will of the majority of the Congress on two occasions with vigor. Thirdly, I don't believe that the Government Contracts Division has operated with vigor. Everyone who does business with the government should have the opportunity to make sure that they do not practice discrimination in their hiring, and that's in all sections of the United States. And then fourthly, as a moral leader, there is a very strong moral basis for this concept of equality before the law. Not only equality before the law, but also equality of opportunity. We are in a very difficult time. We need all the talent we can get. We sit on a conspicuous stage. We are a goldfish bowl before the world. We have to practice what we preach. We set a very high standard for ourselves. The communists do not. They set a low standard of materialism. We preach in the Declaration of Independence and in the Constitution, in the statement of our greatest leaders, we preached very high standards. And if we're not going to be charged before the world with hypocrisy, we have to meet those standards. I believe the President of the United States should indicate that. Now, lastly, I believe in the case of Little Rock. I would have hoped that the President of the United States would have been possible for him to indicate it clearly that the Supreme Court decision was going to be carried out. I would have hoped it would have been possible to use marshals to do so. But it evidently, under the handling of the case, it was not. I would hope an incident like that would not happen. I think if the President is responsible, if he consults with those involved, if he makes it clear that the Supreme Court decision is going to be carried out in a way that the Supreme Court planned with deliberate speed, then in my judgment, providing he's behind action, I believe we can make progress. Now, the present administration, the President has said, never indicated what he thought of the 1954 decision. Unless the President speaks, then of course the country doesn't speak. And Franklin Roosevelt said, the presidency of the United States is above all a place of moral leadership. And I believe on this great moral issue, he should speak out and give his views clearly.
Mr. Vice President.
Well, Senator Kennedy has expressed some high hopes in this field. Hopes which I think all Americans would share who want some progress in this area. But let's look at the performance. When he selected his vice presidential running mate, he selected a man who had voted against most of these proposals and a man who opposes them at the present time. Let me look also at what I did. I selected a man who stands with me in this field and who will talk with me and work with me on it. Now, the senator referred to the Committee on Government Contracts, and yet that very committee of which I am chairman has been handicapped by the fact that we have not had adequate funds, we have not had adequate powers, we haven't had an adequate staff. Now, in the special session of Congress, and also in the session that preceded it, the Democratic Congress, in which there's a 2-to-1 Democratic majority, was asked by the President to give us the funds and give us the power to do a job. And they did nothing at all. And in the special session in which Senator Kennedy was calling the signals, along with Senator Johnson, they turned it down, and he himself voted against giving us the powers, despite the fact that the bill had already been considered before, that it already had hearings on, and the Congress already knew what it had before it. All that I can say is this. What we need here are not just high hopes. What we need is action. And in the field of executive leadership, I can say that I believe it's essential that the President of the United States not only set the tone, but he also must lead. He must act as he talks.
Mr. Niven with a question for Senator Kennedy.
Senator, while the main theme of your campaign has been this decline of American power and prestige in the last 8 years, you've hardly criticized President Eisenhower at all. And in a speech last weekend, you said you had no quarrel with the president. Now, isn't Mr. Eisenhower and not Mr. Nixon responsible for any such decline?
Well, I understood that this was the Eisenhower-Nixon administration, according to all the Republican propaganda that I've read. The question is what we're going to do in the future. I've been critical of this administration, and I've been critical of the president. In fact, Mr. Nixon discussed that a week ago in a speech. I believe that our power and prestige in the last 8 years has declined. Now, what is the issue is what we're going to do in the future. Now, that's an issue between Mr. Nixon and myself. He feels that we're moving ahead we're not going into a recession in this country economically. He feels that our power and prestige is stronger than it ever was relative to that of the communists, that we're moving ahead. I disagree. And I believe the American people have to make the choice on November 8th between the view of whether we have to move ahead faster, whether what we're doing now is not satisfactory, whether we have to build greater strength at home and abroad, and Mr. Nixon's view. That's the great issue. President Eisenhower moves from the scene on January 20th, and the next 4 years are the critical years. And that's the debate. That's the argument between Mr. Nixon and myself. And on that issue, the American people have to make their judgment. And I think it's an important judgment. I think in many ways this election is more important than any since 1932. Or certainly almost any in this century, because we disagree very fundamentally on the position of the United States. And if his view prevails, then I think that's going to bring an important result to this country in the 60s. If our view prevails that we have to do more, that we have to make a greater national and international effort, that we have lost prestige in Latin America. The president of Brazil, the new incumbent, running for office, called on Castro during his campaign because he thought it was important to get the vote of those who were supporting Castro in Latin America. In Africa, the United States has ignored Africa. We gave more scholarships to the Congo this summer, we offered them, than we'd given to all of Africa the year before. Less than 200 for all the countries of Africa, and they need trained leadership more than anything. We've been having a very clear decision in the last 8 years. Mr. Nixon has been part of that administration. He's had experience in it. And I believe this administration has not met its responsibilities in the last 8 years, that our power relative to that of the communists is declining, that we're facing a very hazardous time in the 60s, and unless the United States begins to move here, unless we start to go ahead, I don't believe that we're going to meet our responsibility to our own people or to the cause of freedom. I think the choice is clear, and it involves the future.
Mr. Vice President.
Well, first of all, I think Senator Kennedy should make up his mind with regard to my responsibility. In our first debate, he indicated that I had not had experience, or at least had not participated significantly in the making of the decisions. I'm glad to hear tonight that he does suggest that I have had some experience. Let me make my position clear. I have participated in the discussions leading the decisions in this administration. I am proud of the record of this administration. I don't stand on it because it isn't something to stand on, but something to build on. Now, looking at Senator Kennedy's credentials, he is suggesting that he will move America faster and further than I will. But what does he offer? He offers retreads of programs that failed. I submit to you that as you look at his program, for example, with regard to the Federal Reserve and free money or loose money, low interest rates, his program in the economic field generally, are the programs that were adopted and tried during the Truman administration. And when we compare the economic progress of this country in the Truman administration with that of the Eisenhower administration, we find that in every index, there has been a great deal more performance and more progress in this administration than in that one. I say the programs and the leadership that failed then is not the program and the leadership that America needs now. I say that the American people don't want to go back to those policies. And incidentally, if Senator Kennedy disagrees, he should indicate where he believes those policies are different from those he's advocating today.
Mr. Levy, with a question for Senator Kennedy.
Senator, in your acceptance speech at Los Angeles, you said that your campaign would be based not on what you intend to offer the American people, but what you intend to ask of them. Since that time, you have spelled out many of the things that you intend to do, but you have made only vague reference to sacrifice and self-denial. A year or so ago, I believe, you said that you would not hesitate to recommend a tax increase if you considered it necessary. Is this what you have in mind?
Well, I don't think that in the winter of 61, under present economic conditions, a tax increase would be desirable. In fact, it would be deflationary, it would cause great unemployment, it would cause a real slowdown in our economy. If it ever becomes necessary and is wise economically and essential to our security, I would have no hesitancy in suggesting a tax increase or any other policy which would defend the United States. I have talked in every speech about the fact that these are going to be very difficult times in the 1960s and that we're going to have to meet our responsibility as citizens. I'm talking about a national mood. I'm talking about our willingness to bear any burdens in order to maintain our own freedom and in order to meet our freedom around the globe. We don't know what the future is going to bring, but I would not want anyone to elect me, President of the United States, or vote for me under the expectation that life would be easier if I were elected. Now, many of the programs that I'm talking about, economic growth, care for the aged, development of our natural resources, build the strength of the United States. That's how the United States began to prepare for its great actions in World War II and in the post-war period. If we're moving ahead, if we're providing a viable economy, if our people have sufficient resources so that they can consume what we produce, then this country's on the move. Then we're stronger. Then we set a better example to the world. So we have the problem not only of building our own military strength and extending our policies abroad, we have to do a job here at home. So I believe that the policies that I recommend come under the general heading of strengthening the United States. We're using our steel capacity 55% today. We're not able to consume what we're able to produce at a time when the Soviet Union is making great economic gains. And all I say is, I don't know what the 60s will bring, except I think they will bring hard times in the international sphere. I hope we can move ahead here at home in the United States. I'm confident we can do a far better job of mobilizing our economy and resources in the United States. And I merely say that if they elect me president, I will do my best to carry the United States through a difficult period, but I would not want people to elect me because I promised them the easy, soft life. I think it's going to be difficult, but I'm confident that this country can meet its responsibilities.
Mr. Vice President?
Well, I think we should be under no illusions whatever about what the responsibilities of the American people will be in the 60s. Our expenditures for defense, our expenditures for mutual security, our expenditures for economic assistance and technical assistance are not going to get less. In my opinion, they're going to be greater. I think it may be necessary that we have more taxes. I hope not. I hope we can economize elsewhere so that we don't have to. But I would have no hesitation to ask the American people to pay the taxes even in 1961, if necessary, to maintain a sound economy and also to maintain a sound dollar. Because when you do not tax, and tax enough to pay for your outgo, you pay it many times over in higher prices in inflation. And I simply will not do that. I think I should also add that as far as Senator Kennedy's proposals are concerned, if he intends to carry out his platform, the one adopted in Los Angeles, it is just impossible for him to make good on those promises without raising taxes or without having a rise in prices or both. The platform suggests that it can be done through economic growth, that it can be done in effect with mirrors, but it isn't going to be working that way. You can't add billions of dollars to our expenditures and not pay for it. After all, it isn't paid for by my money, it isn't paid for by his, but by the people's money.
Mr. Morgan with a question for Senator Kennedy.
Senator, Saturday on television, you said that you had always thought that Quemoy and Matsu were unwise places to draw our defense line in the Far East. Would you comment further on that and also address to this question, couldn't a pullback from those islands be interpreted as appeasement?
Well, the United States has on occasion attempted, mostly in the middle 50s, to persuade Chiang Kai-shek to pull his troops back to Formosa. I believe strongly in the defense of Formosa. These islands are a few miles, 5 or 6 miles off the coast of Red China within a general harbor area and more than 100 miles from Formosa. We have never said flatly that we will defend Quemoy and Matsu if it's attacked. We say we will defend it if it's part of a general attack on Formosa, but it's extremely difficult to make that judgment. Now, Mr. Herder, in 1958, when he was Undersecretary of State, said they were strategically undefensible. Admiral Spruance and Collins in 1955 said that we should not attempt to defend these islands in their conference in the Far East. General Ridgway has said the same thing. I believe that when you get into a war, if you're going to get into a war for the defense of Formosa, it ought to be on a clearly defined line. One of the problems, I think, at the time of South Korea was the question of whether the United States would defend it if it were attacked. I believe that we should defend Formosa. We should come to its defense. To leave this rather in the air, that we will defend it under some conditions but not under other, I think is a mistake. Secondly, I would not suggest the withdrawal at the point of the communist gun. It is a decision finally that the nationalists should make. And I believe that we should consult with them and attempt to work out a plan by which the line is drawn at the island of Formosa. It leaves 100 miles between the sea. But with General Ridgway, Mr. Herder, General Collins, Admiral Spruance, and many others, I think it's unwise to take the chance of being dragged into a war which may lead to a world war over two islands which are not strategically defensible, which are not, according to their testimony, essential to the defense of Formosa. I think that we should protect our commitments. I believe strongly we should do so in Berlin. I believe strongly we should do so in Formosa. And I believe we should meet our commitments to every country whose security we've guaranteed. But I do not believe that that line, in case of a war, should be drawn on those islands, but instead on the island of Formosa. And as long as they are not essential to the defense of Formosa, it's been my judgment ever since 1954, at the time of the Eisenhower Doctrine for the Far East, that our line should be drawn in the sea around the island itself.
Mr. Vice President.
I disagree completely with Senator Kennedy on this point. I remember in the period immediately before the Korean War, South Korea was supposed to be indefensible as well. Generals testified to that. And Secretary Acheson made a very famous speech at the press club early in the year that Korean War started, indicating in effect that South Korea was beyond the defense zone of the United States. I suppose it was hoped when he made that speech that we wouldn't get into a war. But it didn't mean that. We had to go in when they came in. Now, I think as far as Quemoy and Matsu are concerned, that the question is not these two little pieces of real estate. They are unimportant. It isn't the few people who live on them. They are not too important. It's the principle involved. These two islands are in the area of freedom. The nationalists have these two islands. We should not force our nationalist allies to get off of them and give them to the communists. If we do that, we start a chain reaction because the communists aren't after Quemoy and Matsu. They're after Formosa. In my opinion, this is the same kind of woolly thinking that led to disaster for America and Korea. I'm against it. I would never tolerate it as President of the United States, and I will hope that Senator Kennedy will change his mind if he should be elected.
And Mr. Levy has a question for Vice President Nixon.
Mr. Vice President, you are urging voters to forget party labels and vote for the man. Senator Kennedy says that in doing this, you are trying to run away from your party on such issues as housing and aid to education by advocating what he calls a Me Too program. Why do you say that party labels are not important?
Because that's the way we elect a president in this country, and it's the way we should. I am a student of history, as is Senator Kennedy, incidentally. And I have found that in the history of this country, we've had many great presidents. Some of them have been Democrats, and some of them have been Republicans. The people, some way, have always understood that at a particular time, a certain man was the one the country needed. Now, I believe that in an election, when we are trying to determine who should lead the free world, not just America, perhaps, as Senator Kennedy has already indicated, the most important election in our history, it isn't the label that he wears or that I wear that counts. It's what we are. It's our whole lives. It's what we stand for. It's what we believe. And consequently, I don't think it's enough to go before Republican audiences, and I never do, and say, look, vote for me because I'm a Republican. I don't think it's enough for Senator Kennedy to go before the audiences on the Democratic side and say, vote for me because I'm a Democrat. That isn't enough. What's involved here is the question of leadership for the whole free world. Now, that means the best leadership. It may be Republican, it may be Democratic, but the people are the ones that determine it. The people have to make up their minds. And I believe the people, therefore, should be asked to make up their minds, not simply on the basis of vote the way your grandfather did, vote the way your mother did. I think the people should put America first rather than party first. Now, as far as running away from my party is concerned, Senator Kennedy has said that we have no compassion for the poor, that we are against progress, the enemies of progress is the term that he's used and the like. All that I can say is this. We do have programs in all of these fields, education, housing, defense, that will move America forward. They will move her forward faster, and they will move her more surely than his program. This is what I deeply believe. I'm sure he believes just as deeply that his will move that way. I would suggest, however, that in the interest of fairness, that he could give me the benefit of also believing as he believes.
Senator Kennedy.
Well, let me say I do think that parties are important in that they tell something about the program and something about the man. Abraham Lincoln was a great president of all the people, but he was selected by his party at a key time in history because his party stood for something. The Democratic Party in this century has stood for something. It has stood for progress. It has stood for concern for the people's welfare. It has stood for a strong foreign policy and a strong national defense, and as a result, produced Wilson, and President Roosevelt, and President Truman. The Republican Party has produced McKinley and Harding, Coolidge, and Dewey and Landon. They do stand for something. They stand for a whole different approach to the problems facing this country at home and abroad. That's the importance of party, only if it tells something about the record. And the Republicans in recent years, not only in the last 25 years, but in the last 8 years, have opposed housing, opposed care for the aged, oppose federal aid to education, oppose minimum wage. And I think that record tells something.